Hello, and welcome to Cameron McCune and Bob Dobbs discussing, explaining, discovering what's in my book on Trump and the tech body. And this is episode number 59, and it's being recorded on October 27th, 2022. And if you have the article, we are at the top of page 123. But I was talking to Cameron before we started recording, and he started saying some interesting stuff that I thought you should hear about today. Take today. So, Cameron, can you retrieve the leap you were making, the runoff, the dash from the starting blocks? What was it?
Yeah, so I was saying that what I'm trying to do these days, mostly in sort of background mode, because I haven't reached the point of actually trying to draft it yet. But I'm trying to summarize in very short form the difference between what McLuhan was proposing and what we are doing in the academy and in the world at large these days. And the basic contrast I want to make out is that for McLuhan, what he sometimes called the possibility of survival depended upon us emerging into a world where not only physical nature, but also psychological nature would be subject to a common study. For McLuhan, this implicated the possibility of peace, P-E-A-C-E, which of course is a tremendous need at the moment, when the chances are all too good that we may start blowing ourselves up soon. So that's that's sort of my. It's always been my general focus, but now I'm trying to sort of hone in on it.
Well, what's interesting is Ion said a couple of years ago, I said, what will happen in the world if we and when we get our box with endless electricity start to implement that in a pretty big way? What would happen in the world? What would be its effect? And Ion said it would start World War III. So in February 2022, we established a place with lots of support by elites in around the world to set up the box so when the grid collapsed, we'd be able to rebuild the grid or keep it going, but under a new energy source. And so that started in February. And what happened on February 24th? World War III started, according to Ion, even. So the prediction from a couple of years ago came true. So we're in the middle of something. Me, Carolyn, and JW, and Ion are at the heart of what's going on in the world. And we have a lot of access to information that people aren't privy to. And just this week, there are extraordinary meetings going on with us and certain people, very well-known people, who are very concerned, like you, Cameron, that we have cooked our pooch, pooched our butt. we're in on a collision course with a bad scene. And so there is a lot of a concern. And so we're right in the middle of it. So I certainly, when I'm called on to say a few words, help me out, Cameron. Well, let's pretend you're there. What would you say to people? Well, we've had this discussion a few times where I say, okay, the White House invites you in. What would you do? What would you say? Mm-hmm. And you've talked about it. But that's a year ago we started saying, getting into that kind of stuff, I think. It's a lot more extreme or intense and desperate right now. So your sense of urgency has been caught up to. Everybody agrees, Cameron. We've got an urgent situation. What do you say? What do you say that the new books? There's lots of books on McLuhan coming out all the time now. It's an industry like the Joyce industry, right?
Yep.
There's always some academic is doing something, and you're very dissatisfied with what you see. Matter of fact, you don't even look anymore. You know they're not going to be useful. So,
correct.
What is your point that's different from them, other than saying they're Gutenbergian and you're not?
Yeah, so I don't see any point in engaging in that question, just as I don't think there's anything that could be said to President Biden, for example, in the White House. There's nothing, there's no message that can be given to people if they don't understand the medium of the message. That's the heart of McLuhan is the interplay between medium and message. And in order to have a message of peace, a message of that would go towards inhibiting the collapse of civilization, the great need is for the institution of medium. But as McLuhan was well aware, the problem of trying to communicate about the medium is that it then becomes message. And
that's a problem if it becomes message. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. So in Gutenberg, in the Gutenberg Galaxy, around page 30, McLuhan quotes Humboldt,
German 19th century educator.
That's right, but a man of many different interests and expertises. But he was especially interested in language.
Yeah.
And McLuhan quotes him as talking about language as a magic circle. And he, in the quotation that's in the Gutenberg Galaxy, he talks about the magic circle of language, which, if we understand it, puts us into a new magic circle. And there's, in the quote, Humboldt says, there's no escape from this. So that human beings are always involved in some quote-unquote magic circle, and they're unable to get out of it, except by getting into a new magic circle.
Mm.
So McLuhan is well aware of this, and it can be said to be the problem that the mariner encounters in the maelstrom, because the maelstrom is a whole bunch of circles as a vortex, and it's not possible to get out of one of the magic circles of the vortex without going into another one. So the whole question is, well, if you're in the magic circle and cannot get out of it except by going into another one, how do you get back up to the surface? So McLuhan's thought is kind of generated out of this problem. And his answer to it is that we need to have a science of magic circles. So if every possible message is seen against the medium of some magic circle that makes sense of it, and if we put together all the different magic circles, then we have a science that's very like the science of chemistry or the science of physics, except that now we have a science of human experience, namely of everything that can be said or experienced or perceived or felt against the background of the range of possible magic circles. So that medium that science of media was McLuhan's suggestion for how it's possible in a global village or global theater to establish peace between nuclear-armed antagonistic forces. So what I would, what I have tried to do now for many years at the blog, and for years before that in other blogs, I've tried to establish the possibility of this science that McLuhan was talking about, but it has not been understood because, in my view at least, people are unwilling to submit themselves to the vortex or maelstrom of the infinite regress, of the fact that humans can never get out of magic circles, but if they allow themselves to be submitted to the range of magic circles, what McLuhan called the critical stance, then it's possible for humans to move from the stable point of view of the Gutenberg galaxy to the multiple, and not point of view, the multiple dynamic range of all possible points of view. And in fact, that relates to your book, because we're coming up to related points in your book right away on 123.
Yes. What people often, if they would listen to you, if they heard what you said, they might, and they didn't know McLuhan, they'd say, are you talking about, we need to understand the context? How's that word?
Yes.
You would accept that word for a medium.
Yes, yeah, sure. So, for example, when McLuhan talks about the medium as the message, and he says, so what's the message of cars, right? So the message of cars is roads, hotels, restaurants, refineries, oil exploration, wars that are about who owns the oil and who owns the oil routes and who builds the pipelines, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's the context of cars.
Yeah.
And so a medium for McLuhan is an environment or a context. And once that's said, you could say, well, that context of cars is kind of a magic circle, because if we say, well, how do we characterize that context of cars, then suddenly that large context has become a message. And in order to understand that message, we would have to understand its medium. And problem of ground become figure or medium become message generates an infinite regress. But that infinite regress, which nobody wants to get into because they fear the loss of their orientation, they fear the loss of themselves, that's the only way out of the maelstrom.
Okay, is a magical circle, the magic circle, is that what you hear in cult talk?
No, a magical circle, as meant by Humboldt, for example, and as quoted by McLuhan, simply means a circle that has no exit. You could say it magically defeats any attempt to extricate oneself from it.
Was that the situation with spoken language at the beginning? If there was a beginning?
I don't.
did we get ourselves out of the vortex of spoken language, the context of it?
Well, you know, McLuhan took different views on that sort of question. Sometimes he said that language was a medium within a previous medium, namely thought.
And gesture.
I mean, gesture is another thing. I mean, gesture is already a language, right? And
yeah.
And so is thought, I think. So human beings do exist from the very beginning, whenever that was, and however it took place. There was already a kind of magic circle for humans, in that the gap between people that gets crossed in communication is a kind of magic circle. And that magic circle both holds humans into a singular kind of language, singular kind of culture, but also opens them. If humans aren't open to something other, through what McLuhan called making, as opposed to merging or matching, if humans weren't open to the other through a gap, through tactility, as you would say, then there would be no language.
Right.
A baby cannot base its language learning on some previous understanding. There is no previous understanding. So the possibility of language exists prior to humans. It exists prior to the exercise of language. And that, you could say, is the most basic magic circle of humans. But in a world where peace has been, where the possibility of peace has been lost, that prior magic circle in which all humans exist always has been lost. And that's the great question, is how can that be reestablished? And McLuhan's answer to that is, can only be reestablished through something like science. The classroom without walls.
Right. So what is the context today?
Context today is that although we have the tools of electric technology, especially nuclear armaments, we continue to think within the Gutenberg galaxy. And that's a formula for disaster. So what we need is for thought to emerge out of the Gutenberg galaxy into the Marconi galaxy or era. And if that is done, then and only then can the problem of these nuclear weapons and the sort of mutual antagonism of the great nations be addressed. So that's why there's, you can't go into Biden's office or Putin's office and say, here's what you should do, because that's a message where the medium is missing. And the whole point of science is only to supply messages that have a known medium. So if you think in chemistry, for example, somebody comes along and they say, here is some material that has great promise to be used in computers, or especially these days in quantum computers, because it has some new form of conductivity, let's say. And the guy says, okay, great, that's super. I'll look into the material. What is its formula? And then the guy says, it's SU4O3P2 or something. And once the formula is stated, then research can go on because the medium has been made clear. Well, that's the same thing with messages that human beings give to each other. Unless the medium of their messages is clarified, then the messages cannot actually be understood. And where messages are not understood, you are in a world of potential war.
Yeah, now, McLuhan shows in history that every technology created a war. It never was avoided. So our context, our technological media today, which I call the tech body, will cause a war. So
is causing a war right now.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's not right to say a war as if what's going on in Ukraine is unique. There's all sorts of wars going on. And Ukraine just happens to be the one that the Main Street media are harping on.
Right. I was going to say that there's many wars. So
right.
They usually take out a lot of people. And
yes.
We're in these
huge
wars
numbers.
And people are dying. And no solution. What is it, 1942 of World War II? That was a dark year. We're in that dark year, 2022. You're prepared to accept the violent, you know, outcomes of wars. You see that that's not going to be stopped.
Yeah. So there's a but there's a difference between acceptance and acceptance. I think what you mean is I can foresee it, and of course I dread it, but I would like to explore at least one possible way of extrication. Certainly I don't accept it as something that is in any way good or even that is in any way inevitable.
Well, what is that way of extrication that you're suggesting?
That I just said. It is a recontextualization of human messaging within a science of media.
Yeah, but it looks like that the message about that situation is the activation of nuclear attacks. We can't get past that stage of apprehension. That has to happen before people sort of have a sense of getting out of the magic circle.
I don't believe that. That's to me, that smells of Gutenberg, because it's what somebody like Marx and lots of other people proposed going back to the Gnostics 2,000 years ago. The idea there is that you go along in some sort of linear process, and then there's a revolution, and then the revolution establishes something new. That's a old pattern. I don't think that's in any way extrication from where we're at. It's a multiplication of what we're at. ISIS believes in that. The United States believes in that, in the sense that the idea is that we have enough. If we have enough wars going on, so that the rules-based order is imposed on the world, then everything comes right. So that pattern war leading to peace is a very old one, and it's not one that I think is any good.
So you're asking for a communication, and it wouldn't be done by a human and a press conference. So I'm saying that the nuclear war is the communication.
I understand what you're saying. I take issue with it, but The great danger is that we do have some big war, and that it turns out not to be a mode of communication, but a mode of extinction.
Yeah. So I don't see what you're proposing. You probably would say you're not proposing anything. You're just speaking.
I'm trying to explicate a possibility that McLuhan foresaw, and I think it was a very interesting suggestion, but it's obviously it's very, very difficult for people to understand, and especially to put into practical application, since as I try to show at my McLuhan blog, what McLuhan was proposing and what I'm trying to explicate in McLuhan was known to the Egyptians, was conceptualized by Plato and Aristotle, and so for these 5,000 years for which we have written texts, nobody has been able to understand the proposal. So I don't say that trying to communicate this is in any way easy. The whole motor of Western civilization has been not to understand this, and McLuhan was quite clear on this, that the in the radical dissociation of ear and eye, which according to him takes place in Greece around 400 BC, Western civilization is built on that dissociation. So the usual reading of McLuhan these days is that what we need to do is go back behind that dissociation to a new orality. And the new orality of the global village is then supposedly some kind of great peace. But McLuhan explicitly criticized that in many ways. For example, he often said that the object of his work was to find a way to protect the virtues of the Gutenberg galaxy against the electronic onslaught. So what happens through the Gutenberg galaxy is the development of individual identity, human rights, law, science, all of which McLuhan saw as very, very good. But the problem that goes along with all of those sort of things is that their medium, namely the Gutenberg galaxy, is inherently antagonistic. And so now, when with the electric environment, we have the possibility of something, of a medium that is not antagonistic, but the danger is that it swamps the virtues of the antagonistic environment. So McLuhan's problem is, how do we preserve the good things of the Gutenberg galaxy within the new medium? And that's a very interesting question. And according to him, that question can generate the possibility of practical peace, which is what we need.
Back there 5 minutes ago, did you say extricate PR or explicate PLI?
No, I said extricate with T.
TR, okay.
Yeah. Although explicate is also good.
Yeah, so you say some words and say, yes, something is needed. But I'm not getting how that's communicated, what is needed.
But, Bob, what my whole point is that the communication of a medium in and through which peace is possible, has been known to humans probably forever. But when humans begin to write 5,000 years ago, we already have evidence that they knew this.
What is it that they knew?
They knew that that all human experience comes in fundamentally different flavors, and that the possibility of individual peace, peace within the individual, familial peace, social peace, intercultural peace, all of those things depend upon an understanding of the plurality of fundamental bases through which humans come to experience. And the great problem with this is that if humans are inherently exposed to fundamental bases, plural, they are also exposed to the gaps between those bases. You cannot have plural bases without gaps between them.
So that's bases, so, B-A-S-E-S.
Correct.
So what's a base? So, that's another. That's context, that's medium, magic circle?
Yes, all of the above.
Yeah.
Yeah. So humans have always known that there are different fundamental ways of coming to experience. And notice that when we say ways of coming to experience, that is a different kind of time from the time within experience itself. Right? It's a little bit like the time, if we say that language is generated through the selection of certain forms, certain grammatical forms, and of certain sounds, the time of that generation is not the time of human speech. So when we're talking, we're just talking. We're not at all conscious or working on the selection of grammatical forms and of sounds that make sense. However, going on in our generation of talk is this other time through which our understandable language is generated. Well, for McLuhan and, for thinkers going back forever, human experience is subject to this kind of time through which a base is activated or a fundamental medium is activated. Well, if humans exist only on the surface of their talk, only on the surface of their experience, then there is any time people are antagonistic with one another, there's no possibility of peace, because what is actually generating their language or generating their experience is hidden. And this whole problematic is something that McLuhan was thinking about really for 40 years. So in his very early Dagwood essay, I think, which is from 1942, his concern is to show that Dagwood does not understand the roots of his experience. And because he has been cut off from his roots, he becomes powerless. And through Dagwood's powerlessness, all of the problems that he has personally or in the family or with Mr. Druthers, if that was the right name, I can't remember his boss, but I think it was Mr. Druthers. All of the problems that Dagwood faces in life come from him being cut off from his roots. So from then on, McLuhan is trying to talk about if these roots are actually the roots of human beings, how could we possibly be cut off from them? Right? It's like a plant that gets cut off from its roots. Well, how can it still be a living plant? It can't be. But with humans, that we humans can somehow exist apart from our roots. It's an amazing phenomenon, and it generates war because where humans are united through all of their different cultures, all of their different times, all of their different languages, is in their roots.
Would you, if you were a teacher in a school for young kids, would you teach them that they had more than one self? They bring in the plurality
of
experience?
This is one of the problems we have, Bob, is if you think of the different approaches to education that are going on at the moment, you have people that genuinely believe that it's good for children to be exposed to the notion that their gender, that the gender they have been taught may not be the gender they are.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's not, I think you were headed in the direction that it would be healthy if people learn to question themselves. But no, it is not healthy for people to question themselves absent roots.
Well, roots would be reminding people of their context and early media.
That's right. That's right. But then the problem is that what you're calling early media there, or context, has become a message. So it has, you've gone from one magic circle to another. So the great problem is to try to explicate the access to media that people have as people without threatening their identities, without threatening their family identity and their social and cultural identities. And that is a very, very difficult matter. It's something that for 5,000 years has not been solved. Whether it can be solved now, I do not know. But if we don't solve it, given nuclear weapons and given the sort of idiocy that into which we have devolved, then we're in deep shit.
Hmm.
Hello?
Yeah, no, I'm thinking about what to say next.
Uh-huh. Well, one thing you could say next is let's just, instead of going further along that road, go
to
back.
Page 123?
Well, we could do that, but before we do that, can you say something about your box, which I'm guessing is some form of cold fusion or something, sort of where we're at with the practical application of it.
It works, and it's being implemented to bolster the grid around the United States, which many people in the, I don't know what industry that is, resources, energies, pipelines, I don't know what they call power sources, hydros, think is going to happen soon. The collapse of the grid. Maybe it'll be helped along by some nuclear bombs. So it's ready it's actually purring along and is in operation. But it has not been applied to your house yet or your area because the regular grid's still there. So it's, now we don't say what it's made of. It is not at all like Pons and Fleischmann's cold fusion. It's not like anybody else. There's different ideas have been propped up lately. It's very unique and almost a mystery how it works.
But is it a mode of fusion?
No. Could be said, it's not at all like anybody else's inventions. So if it's not, you know, hot fusion, they're saying hot fusion might be available in a year or so, but we're nowhere near like that, that hot fusion. That's too big. Ours is a convenient-sized box. So we won't explain to people the whole structure of it, because who knows what they'll do with that knowledge. So people who interact with it only know parts, you know, need-to-know area. They don't know it all. Only we know it all. And we're keeping it that way for now. So that's what I would say, you know, it is being made practical. It is in place, which a lot of people are happy that something has shown up that works.
Sure.
I mean, everybody. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, there's a parallel between what I was talking about before and what you're talking about now, right? And the what I was talking about before had the great problem that explication has proved impossible over these 5,000 years. But what you're saying is that a new context is possible, and it has demonstrable application.
Yes.
So that would be, if that actually happens, that would be something very good in my view.
Yeah, that would be maybe an extrication.
Yes.
So what would we, since it always, a new medium always creates unforeseen effects, what would be the unforeseen effects of this?
Peace, P-E-A-C-E.
Right.
Unexpected results, effects, is not necessarily bad. We're in a world where we're making bad things more and more and more and more, and a change of technology could introduce good things.
Well, that would be what McLuhan was saying, that the electric environment got us out of a lot of the problems of the Gutenberg, but nobody got completely free of the Gutenberg. They didn't seem to want to go completely.
People are out of Gutenberg only in their technology. They're not at all out of Gutenberg in their understanding. That's the whole problem.
Is that what you're calling psychology? The problem is in psychology.
I don't know that I used that term.
Yeah, yeah. At the very beginning, you were talking about the chemical science is exterior nature.
But the interior landscape has been misunderstood by readers of McLuhan. I mean, most readers of McLuhan don't pay any attention to the interior landscape, but the ones that do think that interior is something spatial, but it's not. The exterior landscape is the landscape of physical nature, and when we do science, then we take into consideration all of physical nature, from that ever happened, that is happening now, or ever will happen. And how do we do that? We do that through the principles of physical nature, namely the chemical elements. So McLuhan's suggestion for the interior landscape is that we have a similar grasp of the principles of human experience. And human experience is not at all something within people's heads. Human experience involves the engagement with the physical world. But in physical sciences, we try to get rid of the distortion of individual experience. Whereas in the interior landscape, what we're trying to do, as Harold Innes said, is we're trying to use the distortions of experience to generate an understanding of experience.
So exterior is the world of spaces. The interior is not the world of spaces.
Well, it's...
You said people think the interior is a space.
Both of them have very complex relations with times, plural, and spaces, plural. But the times and spaces of the exterior landscape are different from the times and spaces of the interior landscape.
Is the tactile gap between the two spaces or just in the interior space?
No, there's the tactile gap is sort of the fundamental condition of the universe. So it's active in the exterior landscape, it's active in the interior landscape, and it's active between the landscapes.
Mm. Yeah, Ion likes to talk about the outer kingdom, the inner kingdom, and the middle kingdom.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And the middle kingdom is what remains. The inner kingdom and the outer kingdom don't. So it seems that the interval space is more constant than the external or the internal.
Yes, that's true. And we have to understand. I'm just making some coffee here, so if you hear some strange noises, that's what it's about. It's not as if there is a single space and there's the I'm trying to remember the language you used. You had the middle kingdom.
Yeah, the inner and the outer kingdoms, and then the middle kingdom.
So as the middle changes, so do the two sides.
Yeah.
So remains here. Its most important time is a logical time. It's true in the world that when the middle changes, the sides change. But more important than that is the principle that is always at work. So it's the principle that allows us to understand practical things in the world. It's not practical things in the world that then lead to the principle.
What is it? How do you spell principle? That's P-L-E?
Yes.
What is that, a law?
Yeah, well, no. According to McLuhan, it's a discipline. So, for example, in science, in let's say chemistry or physics or biology or genetics or whatever, we come to the truth about things not through some kind of momentary revelation. We come to the truth of things through a discipline that's open-ended. McLuhan called it making as opposed to matching. We engage in the making of a discipline. And that's what he said was the sort of the new science that we need.
So when he titles the book Laws of Media, is laws the same meaning as principles?
Well, let's think of this in terms of an actual science, like chemistry or physics. In chemistry, you have the elements, and then the structure of the elements allows combinations through what we call valence. So the outer ring of electrons either allows combinations with the outer rings of electrons and other elements, or it doesn't. If it doesn't, then you have the inert gases. If it does, then you have a range of different sorts of valence according to the structure of those outer rings.
Yeah.
So you could say that if you want to call the elements principles, then valence can be called laws. So there's an interrelationship between principle and law, and I wouldn't want to say that the one generates the other in linear time, because then we get into some sort of Gutenbergian
dialectic.
Yeah.
So what were the two things there? Elements in chemistry and
their laws. And I said valence, but we could just say in general laws, which is what you were talking about.
Yeah.
You were talking about principles and laws, and I was trying to explicate that in terms of chemistry.
Yeah, and that elements is what? Laws and principles?
Well, I don't know.
I know. What's the other side? You got elements in chemistry. What do you have in media?
Well, that's the
principles.
You see, before I was talking about bases.
Yeah.
Or we can talk about media as the plural of medium. Or we can talk about fundamentals. There's many different ways of trying to characterize the possible plural basic units of a science of media, science of the interior landscape. But the how to characterize those units is itself a question for the science. So when Priestley and Lavoisier were working in their labs in the late 18th century and began to see that oxygen must be an element, and thereby began to characterize the element, something that would not be completed for another 100 years with Mendeleev's table, what was precipitated out of the work of Priestley and Lavoisier was the question of what is an element, how to characterize it, how to use it in the lab, how to use it in practical ways in life, etc. And all of modern history sort of has evolved from that. So McLuhan's suggestion is that something similar is possible for the interior landscape. But the interior landscape cannot be started by people saying, just this is how we have to understand the medium. It doesn't work like that, right? If we look at the history of chemistry or the history of genetics, it's very clear that the beginning of a science is always very indistinct, and then the science works at making it distinct. So we shouldn't expect anything different in a science of the interior landscape. But the problem is, How does something that people have known for 5,000 years and have always failed to communicate, how does that get communicated as a possibility so as to engage common work on it? And that it remains unsolved. When I talk to people about the possibilities of common work, their eyes glaze over. They cannot bring themselves to do it. Even people of goodwill, even people that have a decent mind, as soon as they're confronted with the possibility of common work on the interior landscape, that is to say human experience, they cannot do it. I've had this experience for at least 50 years. You even good friends, you say to them, look, let's just do a diagram here of a very simple diagram. They refuse. They will not do it. It's radioactive. And this radioactivity is what has generated Western civilization, and it needs to be understood. But as long as people are afraid of the radioactivity, it won't be understood.
So we're going forth and implementing a solution, as you said earlier, understanding what our box is. You said, well, that'd be quite remarkable or a delight if that's what can be done with it. So as the bombs explode, we're walking around, hopefully not getting nuked, and implementing the new environment.
Well, that would, if that happens, that would be a very welcome thing. That would be the change after 5,000 years that we need.
Yeah.
Human beings are a little bit of a failed experiment. the great problem in the world is not so much that people are killing people, which is already a terrible, terrible thing. But there are all these plant and animal species that depend on us. If we start nuking everything, their history.
Yeah.
That's a terrible thing that we do to plants and animals that are dependent upon us doing the right thing.
So us walking around and implementing the box in various environments that larger environments can then use, that's a communication, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a
medium.
Absolutely.
It's a very important communication.
Yeah, so you couldn't get a guide to your neighbor to look at the common work or design or whatever it was you were saying.
For example, Clinton.
So we seem to be able to communicate. We don't even have to say much words. We say, look, and switch it on, and there it is. It's a talking environment. It communicates. And
yes.
It seems to say, wow, yes, that's the meter show that is doing that. So
right.
That's...
But the great problem, Bob, is that... There is very little that is less common in human affairs than people putting forward the ultimate solution.
Right.
The ultimate solution is out there a millionfold. So it doesn't do any good to say, here's the solution, we're showing something practical, on and on and on, because everybody has heard it before. So practical application, as you say, needs to be a switch gets pushed, and then lights go on or something, and people are dumbfounded in some way.
Yeah.
Right? The talk about it, let's go invest in it and all this sort of stuff, that's as common as dirt.
Yeah, so we don't talk it. We do it, and it remains relatively secret.
Yeah.
The people need it, and they don't see that they need it yet. Their electricity is working fine. They don't know there's problems in the grid. There is, but
well, I mean,
you in California, you got rolling blackouts and things, right?
Oh, definitely, definitely. But it's not as if, Elon Musk has set up a series of batteries, and I believe it's in the South Australia electrical infrastructure, and it's an attempt to solve blackout problems that are very common there. And it amounts to a working demonstration of this sort of solution. So what you're talking about is, I think people appreciate that need. They're investing in it. They're experimenting in it in various ways. So if you can solve that in a new way that is less expensive or more sure or more
no pollution
robust. Pardon me?
No pollution.
Yeah, so there are ways of implementing what you're talking about that would end up being revolutionary. So I encourage it, but I see many problems to doing it.
Yeah, we've been dealing with problems for 10 years, pretty well how long we've had it, and nothing has stopped us. We have solved all problems that have come
good.
Up.
Well, all right.
So we're on a roll, as they say.
Uh-huh.
Now, just in a in your experience, you have a rolling blackout. How does that affect you in your day?
Well, we don't have them here, but the first problem that people have is with their refrigerators, I think.
Yeah.
The air conditioning goes down and the refrigerator stops, and the combination of those two things leads to food being spoiled, or at least to become suspect. And if that happens on a large scale, then you can have problems in the food supply. You can have problems of people needing to go to the hospital, but the hospitals don't have enough power to look after everybody, and it can snowball.
Well, how come that hasn't happened yet in California?
Because the system, although it's old and creaky, has only had fairly minor problems thus far.
Well, that's lucky.
Yeah.
They turn off stuff and then they maybe have a blackout for 4 hours and the fridge has not rotted yet. And then they put it back
mm-hmm.
on. Is that how they do it?
Correct.
I see.
Yes, but the reason the blackout only lasts for 4 hours, let's say, is that throughout the country and even in California, which is relatively isolated, right? The states in the east are much more integrated because they're smaller and they don't have the kind of mountains that separate California from the states to the east. Even in California, there are power sharing agreements between different systems. So when a system fails or part of the system fails, there are ways of calling in power from different sources. So far, the systems have been able to kind of balance themselves. But it's, as you say, it's precarious. It's everybody fears that there are ways in which the electrical infrastructure is imperiled.
Right. How come you haven't had any blackouts? And you're near San Diego?
Yeah, in between San Diego and L.A.
Yeah, how come you avoided them, your area?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Probably there are good power-sharing arrangements that are less available around San Francisco. Up around San Francisco is where the rolling blackouts usually occur.
Oh, is that
right?
They
can occur here.
Yeah.
There have been some times when people have been asked to shut down their air conditioning or not use power in various ways.
In your area, that's happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so...
Yeah, the way that the power is set up here is that you can sign up to get a reduction in your electricity cost by allowing the electric company, in our case, Southern California Edison, to give you less power at certain times of the year. So you sign up to give the company that power, or that right, and in return, you get a reduction of your cost. And we haven't signed up for that, but probably many people have.
Mm.
So that's one way of trying to sort of regulate the grid.
Well, it's interesting how you're defining what we have to do, and I see, well, that's what I'm doing. So
yes.
I'm talking to someone who's very aware of the consequences of new environments and what has happened in history all the way through. So it's interesting talking about this with you, because I think we cover a lot of the things that have to be said about any new thing that's coming in while I'm doing it. It's, you're a part of the process here. When we get it all laid out and it happens and it's a fait accompli, and I would say, you want to know what it was like to do it? You go listen to me and Cameron talking through the 2 years of it, so to speak.
You know? Yeah, well, yes.
The 59th episode. So,
yes, I very much encourage the practical demonstration of new technology that implicates possibilities of peace.
Yeah.
Since most wars have to do with trying to capitalize on energy or defend energy or attack energy, new technologies of energy are highly, highly important.
Yeah, I think that on the popular cultural, or just where the public is, the collective consciousness McLuhan said we'd arrived at, most people are mediaecologists in a very crude way. They understand that you look around and see the effects. I mean, they see it in the detectives on their TV shows every night, you know.
Right.
The detective
everybody,
process. Go ahead.
Everybody has the idea that whatever is said, whatever is experienced, comes from some point of view. So everybody's a media ecologist in the Gutenbergian sense.
Yeah.
but that Gutenbergian sense is the problem.
Yeah, so I guess the supreme example of Gutenbergian media ecology is media literacy programs, right?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
That seems to be the most popular way of implementing McLuhan's work. So Gutenbergian, it's ridiculous. It really bothered Eric McLuhan. He was very angry about the media literacy people. But again, it's easy to understand. It fits into the old assumptions that don't work. But people don't want to notice they don't work. They want to, quote, believe in it. It's familiar.
Yes, correct. So the problem, as I said earlier, is 5,000 years old. Civilization is generated out of the insolubility of the problem. So solving it is a very, very difficult problem.
The shock of being, of solving it, is a new effect.
Correct. Correct. So we don't know if we're in an environment sort of the last days of the biosphere or if we're in the first days of a new sense of media that is going to liberate not only humans, but the beings of the earth.
Right. So we don't know where we're at.
Correct.
And that's probably a Gutenbergian question, or at least a Gutenbergian responses. That is not going to be resolved unless what we're doing, what my friends and I are doing, is so obvious. The obviousness of it bypasses, are we ending ourselves or beginning a new thing.
Yep.
But the issue is, you don't know, do you have to get everybody to see it?
Because, no, of course not.
Yeah, because like in one valley, you're implementing the solution. Over the mountain in another valley, they're nuking each other. So
No, I wouldn't say that. But if you just think of what happened with the scientific revolution in the roughly 200 years that science has really gotten going, the amount of understanding of those sciences in terms of, you know, how many people understood what was going on was very, very small.
Yeah.
Right? But everybody lived the effects. So
yeah.
Nobody understands, Clinton would say, nobody understands what's going on inside the computer. Most people don't understand what's going on inside the car, which is now, a big computer. So it's not to live in a world that is completely structured by science does not implicate any detailed knowledge of science. On the contrary, people are held by science into ignorance. That's sort of what makes the electric economy work. Keep staring at your phone.
Yeah.
And do not think. So in the new environment, it's probably not the case that people would understand technically or understand intellectually what is going on. It's just that they would no longer be exposed to the weaponization of everything, the weaponization of government against its own people, the weaponization of corporate products against their own users. That's the world that we live in now. And the extrication from that can only take place through the birth of some new technology, be it a physical technology like you're talking about, or be it a new science like McLuhan was talking about.
Yeah. So I brought up the fact that people are Gutenbergian media ecologists. I get a sense of the elites that we're interacting with that are helping us implement things, because it's very expensive, some of the things we're dealing with. There seems to be an intelligence at the highest levels of whatever these people are.
I don't believe that, Bob, but it may be.
No, that's what's interesting. They don't demand us to allow them to invest in it. We don't want investment. People throw money at us. We say, no, not interested. And people back off. I don't know if that would happen before. There seems to be an understanding that this is very dire, and this better work, because we haven't got much anything else coming along. A lot of stuff has been attempted the last 30, 40 years, but none of it works. So there seems to be an interesting understanding. That's what I'm noticing. Not a resistance, so that's pretty neat. Because just think of the resistance of everything up to this point. There's all kinds of examples of resistance to new technologies. There may be a resistance to us, but not yet, which is pretty good. I don't think people. If everybody has this relatively box of endless electricity, it displaces the old money-based economy of survival. Once you have your box, you don't need to pay rent to anybody. You don't need their energy source. You've got your own. That leaves a lot of autonomy, which would collapse the visual space of the money environment.
Sure.
The Gutenberg money environment.
Right, so, but which is disappearing as we speak.
Yeah.
From other causes.
Yeah.
Right. So the idea that you can just print unlimited amounts of money and receive physical materials and services for those pieces of paper, that is disappearing. And then the idea that you can have an economy built on derivatives, which is, you know, the symbol of the symbol of the symbol of the symbol, and have that pyramid of symbols represent investment, that's disappearing. So possibility of nukes is not just one of nuclear bombs. It's also a possibility of financial explosion, which is even more likely in my view.
Mm. Well, apparently the explosion has happened. You know, in England, that new guy, the Indian, Asian Indian guy.
Sunak.
Yeah, that's going to be the prime minister. I think I saw him. I never saw him before, but last March he was in the British Parliament, and he announced, like, in a couple of weeks, they're going to bring in a digital currency. And I thought, well, that's weird. He's saying this is going to happen in 2 weeks. Well, when's it going to happen? And then when I saw this guy replace Liz Truss, I said, that's the guy who made that announcement back in March. So he was destined. He knew what he was talking about because he was going to be in charge of it once they got rid of Johnson and Liz Truss. He had to wait for that process to happen. So there he is sitting pretty with the power to sort of attempt a new currency. Now, what was funny is Russell Brand, I think it is, found some footage of him. So he had, the other day, to make himself look like a common man, he had himself putting gas into his car. But he didn't use his car, the Jaguar. He flagged down some guy at the gas station and said, can I borrow your car, which was an average car. And he had himself putting gas in an average car so he could look average. So Russell Brand said, saying, wow, there they are, another guy lying. We don't need another guy lying to us. He's not qualified. And then they showed him going into a 7-Eleven where he had to, pass his credit card and pay for some candy or pop, and he didn't know how to do it. So there was an awkward bumbling with his credit card. So I don't know if those things were released. Why are we getting to see them? Why didn't he stop it? But that seems to be symptomatic of an illustration of the futility of putting a person in a power position. Now, remember, McLuhan said that what's not noticed is this is in the late 60s, we're being governed by committees. It's government by committee now. That could be your magic circle. The government by committee, there is no government by Biden. He doesn't do it.
Correct. That's one of the reasons I said to you that your question about what would you say if you had access to the Oval Office. That's exactly why I said that the question didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, because that's not where decisions are made. Now, the committee can be the cabinet, and they brief themselves every day. And, you know, Biden's just one of the humans in the magic circle. And they discuss whatever's happening and the implications for each one of their departments. So that is what my image is of government by committee, where there is not a dictatorship, unless the cabinet is a dictatorship of Gutenbergian ignorance. That is a problem there. Government by committee. What determines the quality of the committee? So yes, I'd have you go in there and test the quality of the committee, not tell Biden to say something.
Mm-hmm. But that's like that just involves you in the problem of trying to explicate what a medium is, because you're talking about trying to get out of the Gutenbergian circle. That can't be done except by people understanding how the Gutenberg galaxy is a medium, but is not the medium. And that's not going to do, that's not going to be accomplished through talk. People
right.
cannot understand it through talk, will not understand it through talk. So if you're able to produce a box that gives people benefits that then as an effect changes their mind, that is a possibility. But talk is not a possibility. 5,000
yeah.
years of civilization shows that.
Right. I think that's what I was trying to say, is that the people who are in positions to stop us, they don't stop us, and they don't engage in talk. We're not talking. We're just implementing.
Yeah, well, I wish you luck.
Yeah. We don't need luck. It's a fait accompli. We've declared ourselves privately winners. We've won. So you'll hear about that. So after this introductory preamble, we go to 123, and I look at my sentence, and I say, what the hell does that sentence mean? I don't know what I'm saying. So let me try to figure out what's going on here. So I say, we're in a post-tactile, Xenocrinus milieu now. Now, Xenocrinus is a Zappa word, so that has to be explained. We're in a post-tactile Xenocrinus, strange synchronicity milieu now, so there would be no difference between the four Aristotelian causes. No difference? Why do I say that? So then I have myself saying, the four Aristotelian causes are formal cause, material cause, efficient cause, and final cause. The Aristotelian causes collapse because there's no sequence or time spaces in simultaneity. Simultaneous means it's all happening at the same time. The chemical bodies are gone. We're now, quote, ages of observation. And I have that in quote. Where did that come from? So I look back up. Ages of observation. Is that what Barry Nevitt says? Maybe I'll just put it in find. Observation. See where that takes me. It takes me to way at the beginning of the book. And that's the only place. So I don't know where ages of observation comes from. Why I have that in quotes. Do you have a clue?
No, but maybe you just meant to mark it out as important.
Yeah.
Maybe you wanted to have single quotes there instead of double.
Okay.
But let's not go too fast here. Let's when you say something is post-tactile, I think what you mean is that it's tactile squared or tactile cubed.
Yes.
You can't very well use the word post and then say that there's no sequence or time spaces, right? Because post is a linear term, and then you say there is no linearity. So
right.
Post means doesn't mean linear there. It means squared or cubed. And then Xenocrates, that has to do with two Greek words, xenos, meaning stranger, and chronos, meaning time. So Xenocrity has to do with a strange time, and the strange time has to do with not the overcoming or ablation of linearity, but with linearity and simultaneity being in dynamic interplay. So I think what you're in the process of trying to show is that the post-tactile Xenocris, I don't know if I'm saying that right, Xenocrinus milieu,
yep.
That needs to be explicated, and you're going to explicate it in terms of engaging with time and with the whole question of ages. Obviously, ages is a difficult word once you're talking about simultaneity.
Yes. So Don Thiel always said, well, we're in a post, post-Newton time. And mm-hmm. he would mean, and I think it's what you're getting at, a nonlinear meaning of post. We were still dealing with post, with Newton. Newton was the cliche environment. So the transition to the Newton environment is not what is meant by post. So post-tactile means, if Thiel was saying it, in his meaning, in his books, is that we are in a, you know, in a tactile environment. It's post-tactile. There was a transition that tactility brought in, and then once it had established itself, then you're post-tactile. It's an odd way that he would use the word, but what you just said about that the linear version of tactile reminded me of how he was using the word post. So I wanted to mention that, and you're right that I do have tactile squared in the tiny node chart. That's in the Croker quadrant. And then I have quark-tuned cubed in the Dobbs quadrant. So you're right that if I'm trying to say post-tactile, I had forgotten that I had done that with the squaring and cubing process.
Mm-hmm.
So then I say, since we didn't know what was human anymore, we essentially moved into a period of silence. Ah, there's the non-talking. We've moved into a period of silence. Like we're implementing our thing in an atmosphere of silence, and we're allowed to do it. That's what's interesting. There seems to be an intelligence to understand, well, let these guys do this. They know what they're doing.
Within the Gutenberg galaxy, silence is understood as the opposite of talking or the opposite of noise.
Mm.
But in the electric environment, silence is what is tactility.
Well, McLuhan said the unnoticed sounds.
Yeah, the gap.
Yeah, yeah. Notice the unnoticed effects. Yes, so that's a good point. And I include that in how we're operating. We recognize that some things we're not noticing, but we're pretty good at noticing everything because we've been playing with it for 10 years. And a lot of strange things have happened with it, but we are on top of it, it seems. There's been a few problems throughout the years, but they get fixed.
Are you talking about technological problems or problems of practical implementation because of communication problems with the people that
technological problems. Technological, instrumental, practical,
uh-huh.
whatever you meant by that, you know, the parts.
Right.
There was
yeah.
a part
But obviously,
problem.
Obviously that's not happening in Maui, right? I mean, there's no possibility of doing stuff like this in Maui for many reasons.
Yeah. There's a certain counterintuitive environment that you do it in. You know, it's not what people expect. But there mm-hmm. is an environment to do it in, and that's what's interesting. I'll leave that in the realm of silence for now. Gutenbergian silence.
Sure.
But I think that's an example of Xenocrony, a happy synchronization. I didn't know what the heck that sentence meant in light of what you had been saying. Then we go down to the next sentence, and there's the whole point of no talk. Even though it's Gutenbergian, that's a nice surprise for me that the words, and I didn't see them coming, fit what we were talking about. We're talking about a kind of silence that has to be implemented because the talking that's being done in all kinds of media today is the noise that keeps the presses printing money, but does not solve anybody, does not create wealth, does not get us out of the poor condition we're in.
Right. So what's needed is what's called a gestalt switch between one kind of understanding of human experience, of history, of practical politics, of the financial game, et cetera, et cetera. So the what can be called the media ecology view of all of this stuff is that everybody has their point of view, and we need to understand those points of view, I guess that's one way of putting it. And that the problem is that's just Gutenbergian squared. That just embeds us in our problems more and more.
Yeah, that's matching. Understanding is matching.
Correct. So what's needed is silence, as a silencing of that way of understanding into a new way of understanding. And that gestalt switch is necessarily not spoken in any way of understanding.
Right.
Because, we're talking about what exists between ways of understanding.
Yeah, because I don't watch commentary, very little, but there's so much of it. Carolyn watches different parts, so I just have to look over on her screen, and she's watching some commentary. And they all have the assumption, you have the pretty girl, and she comes out and says, oh, tonight we've got Cameron McCune and Bob Dobbs here. They're going to explain, blah, blah, blah. And there's the big mistake. They think by talking something and pretending they're going to get somewhere, which they never do, and then they let you talk for 10 minutes and they move on to someone else who proposes a topic, and then that's talked about and argued about and goes nowhere. The big assumption is that they think they're very important, the host. They have a show, and they're going to help us be informed. And that's exactly what we don't need. We really don't need the talking that's going on, which used to be have a news function, but as most people now recognize, there's no news in that sense happening in the talking. It's
correct.
Almost an endless chattering in the dark. What's that? Nervous in the dark. Whistling in the dark, right? Just because you can't take the silence.
Correct. But I would disagree with you that these people think that they're important. They get a lot of money, and they get a lot of attention. But they are unable to see any importance to that. And so what happens is you go from somebody like Walter Cronkite, let's say, who's recognized as some sort of information guru, who actually is reading a script that's been prepared by people that nobody knows anything about.
Yeah.
And so that Walter Cronkite, I don't know, let's say that's 1960.
Yeah.
So here we are 60 years later, and everybody knows that even the weatherman, let alone the political commentary people or the talking heads behind the desk, everybody knows that they are just mouths. They're just saying stuff that somebody else has given them, right? So everybody knows that there's nothing going on here.
Yes.
And the people that are doing it, they're doing it just like the guy that's stocking toilet paper in the supermarket. Nobody thinks there's any importance to this. The only importance is getting the check, getting the bennies, getting what you need. That's
it. Okay, so you're saying I would agree that these the Tucker Carlson ad are in great states of anxiety, and you see that more in the entertainment celebrities who don't have a forum every night, like Kanye West. Okay? So Kanye West, he feels the need to be a Tucker Carlson or something. So he forms a church and a ministry so he can talk. And then he does interviews, and it gets him in trouble. He's a symptom. His breakdown is more obvious than Tucker Carlson's breakdown, or Whoopi Goldberg, or any of those people on there who are under incredible pressure to keep yammering every day and pretend that they're getting somewhere. So,
yeah. They're kind of stand-ins for the state of the world.
Yeah, they're stand-ins for the silence that's actually happened. You know, so I understand a lot of people don't watch the talking heads anymore after the last couple of years. They're moving into silence. Now,
yeah, but some there's of them, silence and silence. That's the whole problem, right? Moving into silence as the opposite of talk is a Gutenbergian move.
Yeah, and they're communicating because what they're doing in silence is stocking up on supplies, bullets and beans and gold and guns to prepare for a confrontation with somebody. That's how they're communicating in silence.
Mm-hmm.
We're not doing that. We're not preparing for an invasion. We are maybe creating an invasion by making a new environment and doing it in silence.
Yeah, that's the only way it can be done.
Well, okay. Kudos to you, Bob. You're doing it the right way, says Cameron. Right? That's what you just said.
Yeah, well, if you're doing it not through promotion,
yeah,
then that's the only way it can be done. Lots of times you've asked me, you know, why am I working away on my blog day after day after day, year after year, and not trying to be some sort of, you know, academic guru or
some kind of public notice. You're not trying to get some
right.
public notice.
Correct, because notice is the problem. It's
yeah.
not the solution.
Yeah. So that sounds like Christianity. What I understand, the values of Christianity, you know, you don't be vain. You don't try to draw attention to yourself. You do your work, and it's almost an act of prayer, you know, that Carlyle idea of work is prayer, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's talked about in Take Today. It's a meditation, and not a lot of interacting with other people is required. See, the sociality of people, which would be the magic circle, which would be the effect of a medium, beginning with speech, say, that's what people are, quote, addicted to, what they are uncomfortable with if they don't have it. There's too much communication. So, you know, once I heard on CBC in 1970, I'll never forget it, I know exactly where it was, and some panel said, was talking, some psychologist, and he says, you know, I was on a panel with McLuhan, and his answer was, no communication. We shouldn't communicate. And the psychologist says, you know, I was shocked by that. And this communications expert says there shouldn't be any communication. But he didn't get the role of silence that McLuhan was referring to, or the addiction to social interaction. What, 5,000 years of social interaction, or what's called a friction-based society. With our technology, we're moving into frictionless-based context. Frictionless.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
you can say, there's a fundamental difference between two different kinds of fusion. In one kind of fusion, the difference is destroyed. In another kind of fusion, difference is acknowledged and is celebrated. So the fusion through destruction is friction, and fusion through acknowledgement and celebration of difference is frictionless.
Yeah. And remember in Hot and Cool, McLuhan says in the interview at the end, first there's fission, then there's fusion. Remember that phrase?
Yes.
First there's fission, then there's fusion.
He said already in 1951, I forget in exactly which essay, I think it might have been The Aesthetic Moment in Landscape Poetry, but he says, in literature as in physics, I'm just saying this roughly, but the sentence is something like, in literature as in physics, what do you...
Silence. You've entered into silence.
I'm sorry that I'm not...
you can't recall it.
...coming up with the exact phrase here, but I will in a second. So just talk about... frictionless technology for a minute.
Well, our technology is frictionless, and all technologies before that were friction-based and therefore entropic, and they wore out. Ours doesn't wear out, so that's negentropy. Those are terms that I apply to this. Frictionless is negentropy, and friction-based is entropic.
So what? But that's what you're talking about. There is you're talking about a sort of a whole new model of science, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Because what you're talking about is a perpetual motion machine.
Yeah.
Which in a regular science is not possible.
Right.
So. The sentence I was looking for is, in art as in physics, fission preceded fusion.
Ah, that's back in 51.
That's 51, yeah.
Wow, art and in physics. Art and physics. Fission
art as in physics, fission preceded fusion. And so then the key thing, which you're also doing on the page we're looking at in your pamphlet, is... the word preceded needs to be unpacked.
Yeah.
So it's not a linear preceding. It's a synchronic preceding. So what it's saying is that the true sort of fusion needs to implicate fission simultaneously.
Yeah.
And is fusion is not the abrogation of fission.
That's right. Did you say abrogation?
Yes.
Yeah, that came up earlier today. That word is used a lot by Ion. It means abdicating responsibility, right?
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Abrogation.
Yeah. So rogation, that has to do with questioning.
Rogation.
Yeah, from the Latin.
That's
so
Joe Rogan.
Abrogation.
That's Joe Rogan became his name. He's always questioning people.
Well, maybe. Yeah. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. So the reason you couldn't remember the quote is you were saying art and literature, and that didn't work.
That's right. So yeah. I knew there was something wrong, so I looked up the quote, and then I gave it to you exactly.
Is that in Interior Landscape, The Aesthetic Moment, or were you citing another?
Yes. It's in the interior landscape.
Okay. So I'm prompted to see what the next quote is I've written. We've got the silence. Since we didn't know what was human anymore, we essentially moved into a period of silence. Then I casually say, President Richard Nixon called it the silent majority. We didn't know what to say anymore. We knew speech was obsolete. Now, that's what you were just saying, that's a common perception now. Is all this talking going on at the airport and all around you in the media, the TV landscape.
So, as we've often pointed out, when something like a book or a car becomes obsolete, there's more of it, not less of it.
Yeah.
So that's what's going on with when people stop talking in the old sense, they talked more. It's crazy.
Yeah. We knew speech was obsolete. McLuhan said that everybody was, quote, deaf, dumb, and mute. Yeah, it's interesting when you go through the airport, there's all this talking going on the TV screens around the various places where people line up to get on their particular plane. And everybody's ignoring it. So what is the newsreader aware that they're broadcasting in modern cities called airports, millions of people going through them, and nobody's paying attention to you, lady, and what you're saying, unless it's something very dramatic, like, Biden gets up and shoots himself in the middle of a press conference or something.
Even that, people have become used to the manufacture of startling stuff.
Yeah, the global theater of the absurd, to expect the unexpected. Yeah. They're used to the unexpected now. See, that's where we've really come to a lot of what McLuhan projected in the quote, the future. We've arrived at and passed through, you know, to expect the unexpected. Everybody's doing that. We don't need to be told to do that by McLuhan. We're expecting the unexpected, and therefore it's not unexpected in a sense.
Right. We're slowly coming to a consciousness of the sorts of problems that need to be solved.
Yeah. The natural classroom is happening. The correct classroom.
That's right. But the problem is that in the 5,000 years since these problems became fairly obvious, or at least, you know, the 5,000 years, that just is the time in which we have texts. Personally, I think that consciousness of these problems goes back as long as there have been humans on this earth.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, nobody knows if that's 300,000 years or a million years or what it is.
Right.
Becoming, just because a few people become conscious of the problem to be solved, doesn't mean that the problem gets solved. Not at all. Even the people that come up with solutions can't communicate them.
Yeah.
Right? So
they can't verbalize them. And then they try to demonstrate them, and the demonstrations usually don't go anywhere. Our mm-hmm. demonstrations work.
Well, good. I sincerely hope that works. I would just say that it's not really, you can't really say that that Leibniz or Hegel or Aquinas or whatever weren't able to verbalize. No, no. They were very able to verbalize, and they may even been right. But what they weren't able to do was to communicate in their verbalization.
Yeah. They couldn't create a magic circle.
Well, they couldn't get their magic circle couldn't relate to other magic circles.
Yeah. Okay, so we come to this interesting point of silence. So then I said the early McLuhan used books. He announced they were not important anymore for him in 1969. So he was interviewed in Take One magazine, a film magazine in Toronto, I think.
Right. And but he actually, in 59, in the Playboy interview.
No, that's 69. Playboy is 69.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting mixed up between 69, 59, and 49. What I want to say is that in the Playboy interview in 1969, he says that the problem with The Mechanical Bride is that it was produced in a book environment for book people.
Yeah.
But that he realized around 1950 that the environment was actually different from that, and he had to address a different problem and take up a different stance. So he was through with books not in 1969, but in 1949.
Right. And then he's got to use words to talk with us. That means he's got to use books. So he had to go through the cultural processing of them by McGraw-Hill and other publishers. When they encountered McLuhan, they thought, well, this guy seems to be saying something that's important and correct. We've got to put it into book format. So he didn't resist the translation of his work into books for a while. And then he just gave it up and let Barry Nevitt, Wilford Watson, and the rest of them do the books, right?
And yes.
He's saying this.
Even though they have lots to say that actually contradicts what McLuhan would have said.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And so he says in 69, May, June 69, so that's right after the Playboy interview, I'm through with books. So then I say, McLuhan actually said, I'm through with books. He had a couple more to finish with co-authors, but that was it. He was now making movies. He was leaving the Gutenberg galaxy behind and getting into the Android meme. I think he says, I've got about six more books to wrap up to finish in that interview. Hopefully get them done this year, and then I'm really finished with books. But he had not finished ones that had started, you know, a few years before and were taking a while. So then I go to the Cliched Archetype book, 1970, and a blurb on the cover. The blurb says, with his all-embracing powers of observation, Marshall McLuhan traces the creative pathway from Cliched Archetype in this, the book he considers his most important work since Understanding Media. So there's a sentence that a lot of people never noticed. You know, they always say, if you want to understand McLuhan, read Understanding Media or Gutenberg Galaxy. They don't get, there's a new book that's more important than Understanding Media. And Harold Rosenberg, you know, the famous New York art critic, he promoted McLuhan's Understanding Media. But then he was on a panel in 69 with McLuhan just outside New York City. And McLuhan finished his talk, and so they asked the other people, said, okay, Mr. Rosenberg, you like McLuhan. What do you have to say about what he just said? And he says, I have no idea what McLuhan's talking about. And he shut up. Now, okay. That's because McLuhan had developed a new language, the Cliched Archetype, and that's probably what he was talking, you know. And no one had heard that before. So they went back to incomprehension. So then I say, from the original book sleeve, from Cliched Archetype, here's another quote. From Cliched Archetype is Marshall McLuhan's most important and definitive statement on today's culture and technology since Understanding Media. It goes way beyond the medium as the message theme into a scintillant study of the process of intermedia action. I always thought they were important in that nobody read McLuhan's development after Understanding Media, where he's saying, hey, it ain't medium is the message anymore. It's something else. So that very little statement I'm talking about is not covered by any McLuhan scholars. They're still
Right. You're absolutely right there. The what we have been talking about now for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Is actually the move from medium as the message to intermedia.
Yes.
And the reason that is necessary is that as soon as medium is the message, then medium has become the message. The medium as archetype has become cliche.
Yeah.
So the only way out of the infinite regress that is precipitated there is to study intermedia. That is to say, the plurality of media needs to be understood. And in order to understand the plurality of media, you have to understand the border between media. And that border is necessarily silent. Or if it's not silent, then it's just one more message in one more medium.
Yeah. Okay, so I translate that by saying, that's an important new statement by McLuhan, and this is when he's saying the medium is the message is out of date. The publisher is quoting McLuhan declaring, quote, this book is way more important than the one you know me for because it gets into the intermedia process. Well, that's what
right.
You just said.
Right, but let's notice the tension between, on 123, you're talking about there's no sequence or time spaces in simultaneity. That's what you say on 123.
Yeah.
And now on 124, you say that something is out of date. Well, those two uses of language are obviously difficult to understand. So in a Gutenbergian sense, you can say there's a contradiction, something's wrong here. But in a Marconi sense, you have to interrogate the two of them together.
Yes, excellent. And what was the other thought there? So you're saying, I was going to point out that you have to talk both. And in that Wyndham Lewis article I sent you, the author seems to understand that. So if you dare to read it, get into it, look for that they get that point. You can't drop one for the other.
You say in your message, in the email, you say yourself, I haven't read it, but I send it to you.
No, that is the person who sent it to me wrote that.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, they said they haven't read it.
That would be a funny
thing
for you to say, too.
Yeah, yeah. But I've read it, and I thought you should read it. But she sent it to me, and I just deleted her details and just had the article itself there. But, yeah, I didn't put that title in. Okay, now we jump from there to Croker. And he's got a book called The Will to Technology and the Culture of Nihilism, 2004.
Yeah.
So what is...
I think that's mostly about Heidegger, and if I remember correctly.
Well, he...
But anyway.
He does Nietzsche, Heidegger, and Marx, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And all of them are Germans, and Croker doesn't know German very well.
Yeah, but Croker sounds like a German name.
What's that?
Croker sounds like a German name.
Yeah,
he's become his name.
He's become his name in many different senses.
Right, so I'm interested in why I placed this quote in that position here.
Yeah.
And what comes after... I do a long talk there. I have another quote by Croker. And then I talk. And then I have...
Where's the other quote by Croker? Are you up
it follows
7
it.
Already?
Or? Yeah, the next page. No, I just jumped ahead to see where it goes.
Oh, I see.
And it's
yeah,
on the next
got
page.
Several from the same book.
Yeah, and then there's...
But don't go too fast.
Because, no, I'm just checking what they are. So then Notes on Burroughs, I go back to 1964 to an important article by McLuhan after Croker. Okay. Yeah. And what's interesting about Burroughs, he is famous in the 80s and 90s, the same time Croker is famous. You know, so they go together, Burroughs and Croker. So I'm going back up to the first Croker quote. So... He says, when most assuredly we have finally broken beyond the industrial stage of capitalism, finding ourselves either passive observers or active participants, but fully complicit in either case, see, whether you're passive or active, you're still involved, but fully complicit in either case, in the unfolding destiny of the digital future, in the vectors of an emergent form of finance capital that through the medium of the digital nervous system and biogenetics is reprocessing the classical codes of the commodity form. That sounds like moving from software to hardware, where McLuhan puts it into quotes. We were going from hardware to software, you know, on the cover of Take Today, and he puts hardware to software in quotes. We went through that last time. So he's saying... biogenetics is reprocessing the classical codes of the commodity form into the flesh trade of surplus bodies and surplus imagination, and doing so in a traditional capitalist style that is global only in the sense of monopoly. So he's complaining about the Gutenbergian model is still in charge. That's the traditional capitalist style, right? So,
well, the problem is that he says we have finally broken beyond. And then, as you say, he sees that we haven't finally broken the ice.
I say we're in the world of silence at 80, but you are out of date. So, yeah, he got this is the problem
is
of language, of words.
Yeah.
You're always going to be contradicting yourself until the actual environment makers show up, which is yours truly here. We're walking around implementing the new environment very quietly while parades are going up and down the main thoroughfares, distracting everybody from us. Did you get that?
Well, you know, that's what you've been saying, and I've wished you my best in several times.
Well, we're relying on your commentary. We'll use this later when we start talking again.
All I can say is that I wait with great expectation.
Good. And I always remind you, we also are making breakthroughs on the health level with universities. And that's pretty incredible. It's hard to say which is, they're both astounding, both fields, energy and medicine, that we're doing. And definitely I would say that what we're accomplishing is the first new technological reality of the 21st century. You know, the 21st century will be known for certain breakthroughs like the 20th century, and the 19th century has their icons. Our stuff will be the inauguration of a new century, in fact, you know, if we think that a new century has to be sequentially more significant than the previous century. But that's...
Well, and of course, the presupposition there is that there's going to be a new century. I hope there will be.
And there will be for us. We're so damn protected, nobody's going to nuke us.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
But it doesn't do any good to be unnuked in a nuked world.
Well, though, if we've got our health products, we'll be doing fine. Radiation won't even bother us. So, now this is the kind of stuff we say on our radio show. We don't hide stuff in a way twice a week. We get out there and talk it up. So we're not giving up words completely. We're not operating in silence completely, which would be what you have to do. You can't drop the past. You can't drop the future. You have to include them. So you include your contradictions. As I think Madonna is well known, back in the late 80s, she says, I contradict myself. So what? There's where speech doesn't matter anymore. You can't, you know, go to a store, like in the 19th century, a general store, and buy some stuff and start contradicting the process of communication as you pay for it, right? It's a simpler world. But you can start saying ridiculous statements of, I'm contradicting myself, and so what, when you're not limited to the chemical body world. I mean, Madonna's saying that in the TV body landscape. It's a different audience, a different reception for her actions. So I like your point that Coker contradicts or, you know, he cuts himself off at the pass. When most assuredly we have finally broken beyond the industrial stage of capitalism, finding ourselves either passive observers or active participants, but fully complicit in either case in the unfolding destiny of the digital future, there's a mistake to talk about a future. In the vectors of an emergent form of finance capital through the medium of the digital nervous system and biogenetics is reprocessing the classical codes of the commodity form into the flesh trade of surplus bodies and surplus imagination and doing so in a traditional capital style that is global only in the sense of monopoly. Now, he ends the sentence, but he doesn't get out of the problem of the sentence. So he's then going to write another sentence, and we'll go down to it, and repeat the same paradox. We'll do with the intervening Bob talk probably next time. So he then says, not politics subordinated to the capitalist axiomatic, but a new politics that deals in the political language of chaos theory. Symbolism and virtuality and perturbations and morphological changes of state. A virtual politics that exists only because it is aware of unintended consequences of technology and which rubs the dreams of digital reality against the human disturbances of third world labor camps, environmental shutdowns, genetically engineered food, and the triumph of economic injustice. Now, that's a good sentence because he's talking about how people have become media ecologists. And we look at the effects. And if I'm the engineer bringing in this thing, then we are looking at effects. So he says,
yeah,
back.
But you see, the problem is it's not good enough to state the problem. Croker is really quite excellent at stating the problem.
Yeah.
And his language is very colorful and shows a lot of art. He's a very good word merchant.
Mm.
But the problem is to see how these problems can be conceptualized in a way that gives an exit, that resituates them in a new magic circle that is that liberates us. So Croker may have some sort of unconscious understanding of what that new magic circle must be. But instead of articulating that, what he does is articulate the problems of the old system.
Yeah, and celebrates good explainers of the old problems, like Marx,
yes.
Heidegger, and whoever I left out, Nietzsche.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yes, although I think that Heidegger's on a different level from Marx and Nietzsche. I think he, Heidegger, you know, lectured many times in the 1930s on Nietzsche.
Mm.
And his lectures have been published both in the German and in English translation in multi-volume works. So in German, it's in two very big volumes, and in English, it's in four different volumes. And so what Heidegger does with Nietzsche, not only in those lectures, his writings on Nietzsche could easily fill another volume, his essays and other lectures on Nietzsche. So what Heidegger does with Nietzsche is more or less what we were just talking about, Croker.
Yes.
Heidegger takes Nietzsche both to define problems very well and to point beyond those problems in a way that Nietzsche himself could not see. And so that's the same with Croker. Croker actually kind of implicates the solution to what he's talking about, but he does not know that he does so.
That's right. And he doesn't know that he knows the guy with the solution.
Well, there's two kinds of knowing here. There's
yeah.
knowing Bob with his box, and there's knowing the need to explicate a medium in which these problems would become subject to investigation. So that was McLuhan's suggestion. Croker wants to go beyond McLuhan. That the problem with that is it gets into linearity and it gets away from what I regard it as the only possible solution.
Okay, I'm going to reread the quote because it's a good nostalgic quote. So we don't want politics subordinated to the capitalist axiomatic. So he says, not politics subordinated to the capitalist axiomatic, but a new politics that deals in the political language of chaos theory. Now, that would be the chaos butterfly?
No, chaos theory is a branch of mathematics that deals with breakthroughs. so that it deals with the fact that quantity can become quality either through multiplication or through destruction. So chaos theory is a way of trying to look at chaotic situations in formal terms.
Okay. So a new politics that deals in the political language of chaos theory, if the chaos butterfly is a part of that, then that's what we are. We're the chaos butterfly, what we're making. But a new politics that deals in the political language of chaos theory, that's a good statement. And then he then elaborates, symbolism and virtuality and perturbations and morphological changes of state. All that is a virtual politics. It exists only because it is aware. So it exists only because it's aware of unintended consequences of technology. So that's like saying it exists only because it is McLuhan, and which rubs the dreams of digital reality against the human disturbances. That's just another statement of looking at technology affecting humans, and which rubs the dreams of digital reality against the human disturbances of what? Third world labor camps, environmental shutdowns, genetically engineered food, and the triumph of economic injustice. So that is the effects on the chemical body. So he's saying that he's being the new politics because he is talking in the political language of chaos theory, which would be pointing out virtual causes and then showing the unfortunate effects, like labor camps.
But that's academic media ecology.
Yeah.
And the reason that remains locked in Gutenberg is that it remains locked in a description of the problems or as a listing of the problems. It does not get to the new language that he sees is needed.
Yeah.
And
go ahead.
Well, the reason that he doesn't get there is that the only way to get there is to enter the maelstrom of the infinite regress. So we need a new language. What is that new language? Well, it's a new language.
Well, it's what we're doing.
It just goes on and on and on.
We're the new language. If it works, we're the new language. We're implementing the language.
Exactly. If there is a way of, I'm looking for a way of describing the heart of the problem. But, of course, I have to use words to do that. What you were doing, well, you do a lot of talking on your damn self.
Yeah, on the other days when I'm not at work.
That's right. So, but what I see that you're doing is important. You're saying, well, in order to establish a new environment, there needs to be a new product that works practically, that upsets our very notion of product.
Yeah.
Right? So, and as I've said many times in our conversation today, you know, I applaud the intention, and I look forward to its
success.
Exfoliation.
Yeah. Yes. Generation X and younger, I noticed in their writings, they use the word problematic. They're always writing, and they've learned in their Coker world, to find new problems. They're always talking about the problematic. Have you noticed that word?
Yeah, so that comes from the German. It's just the Germans have been talking about that for 2 centuries at least. So.
Okay. Yeah. So, and towards these poor kids, you know, they're looking for the problematic all the time.
Yeah. And I wish them luck. The way that you get there, though, is not by endlessly talking. You have to get into the problem. You have to allow the problem to dominate you. That's what people what people don't understand is that the only possible answer is to quit being the steersman of the process and allow the process to dominate you. Nobody that I know is able to step from being the announcer or the steersman of the solution to allowing the solution to dominate them. And that's the critical move. The reason nobody will do the figures is that the figures are figures of domination, and nobody wants to be subject to them. The whole notion of civilization for 5,000 years is of the subject as steersman. That's what media ecology amounts to. Media ecology is the steersman seeing the different forms of media domination. But that does you no good. You need to be able to, instead of looking at these things, you need to come from these things. We are always already dominated. So it's not a question of seeing the dominations. It's stepping into the dominations and coming from there.
And I think that's, I have been submissive to the Coldplay project for 10 years, so I consider that giving in the way you're mm-hmm. talking about it.
Well, your tiny note chart is a map of that process.
Yeah.
The tiny note chart, as far as I understand it, is a map of dominations.
Yes.
And at the end of it, you don't announce that you're coming out of the various magic circles defined in the chart. You say, well, here's another, the chart represents another magic circle. And the only way to understand the chart is to come into the new magic circle.
Yes.
It's not the end of magic circles. It's simply a new one.
Yeah. And that's indicated at the bottom where it says, waiting for organic bodies, the spinning clothing crystals have danced the hexadvertisement.
Yeah, yeah. So what you're talking about with the 10 years engagement with the technology is a variation on what you were saying 10 or 15 years before that.
That's right, yeah.
Right? So I see you as a person that is, you do not mind dominations.
Right.
Right? You are willing to put on mask after mask after mask, and you don't really give a shit about the steering self that is supposedly putting on these masks. You're very happy to say, well, myself can be this mask.
Yes.
Or this role or whatever.
Yep, as
and that's good.
Yeah,
that's a new type of freedom.
Yeah, as someone used to say, Bob, you have a sunny disposition. I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
that's
very
true.
Nice words. I think you're getting to understand what we're doing here, closer and closer. You're getting better at articulating the issues.
But I think this is, you know, lately I've become a little bit interested in Japanese Shinto, which is in Japanese. Shinto is Chinese pronunciation of the Japanese characters.
Yeah.
So but the Japanese pronunciation is Kami no Michi, and Kami no Michi means the way of the gods. So the way of the gods in Japanese Shinto is to understand the elements. So the sun, the moon, the clouds, the wind, the earth, the plants, to understand these forces as dominant, right? So when we say Bob's got a sunny disposition, it's not that Bob has the sunny disposition. It's the sunny understood in concrete terms as the sun. Bob is dominated by that type of disposition.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
And disposition is an interesting word. It's Bob is not one position, but amongst the dispositions, the plurality of position is disposition.
Mm.
Amongst the plurality of dispositions that Bob can have, he is dominated by the sunny one. So
correct.
I want to learn more about how one thinks from the elements.
Right.
I can see that this is going to be, or I shouldn't say I can see, I can sense that this is a direction in which I have to go.
Fantastic. Good. All right. Clear
so
statement?
We should, no, I was just going to say we should probably end there and come back next time to your comments on Croker.
Right, the blue part,
yeah.
The blue region. Okay, great talking to you once again, Cameron. Thanks a lot.
Same here, Bob. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
See you next time.
All right, talk to you then.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye.